You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 64 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, March 25th, 2009. Who needs an encyclopedia? It's that time again, time for the Wells Tech Podcast, another edition of it. This would be episode 64. We're so happy you joined us once again, where we talk about technology, all things technology, and especially how those things relate to ministry and how we can use those things to glorify God and share His Word with as many people as possible. Joining me as usual on our Classroom Technology Day is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm very good. Excited that we've had a touch of spring here in Sleepy Eye and ready for some more.
It must have arrived before it arrived here, so I'm looking forward to it. You sending it on our way.
Yeah.
We haven't really seen it. Raining, okay. Dreary. It's supposed to rain all day today. I think rain into tomorrow. What else? I'm not sure if we can expect much more from a Wisconsin spring. So,
yeah,
but it'll come eventually.
Maybe some snow. What about that?
Yeah. My wife was just commenting. We dropped our daughter off at prep. They had their spring break, and we were driving back from Watertown, and it was the afternoon or setting sun. It was around sunset, and just kind of a pleasing glow about things and how much nicer it is than in the fall, especially because you know that there's hope, you know, at the end of, you know, in a few more weeks. You know, when you're in November and you see that that late afternoon sunset, you know what's ahead of you. So, because we live in Wisconsin. We live in the Midwest. Also, yes. Joining us from the Midwest, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potratz. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, and I agree. Hope springs eternal, and I am looking at the beginning of some daffodils in my front garden, so
oh, man.
I'm ready to go.
Beautiful. Boy, I wish we
Very
could see
encouraging.
That. My wife would love that. That brightens her whole spring when she starts seeing those things that she planted, you know, many, many months ago.
Yeah, daffodils are my favorite.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, glad you could join us again, Gail. We always look forward to our Classroom Technology Day, and we're going to talk about, I'm going to learn a new acronym today, I understand, PLN, as if we don't have enough Wells acronyms, and this really isn't a Wells acronym, it's an educational acronym, as I understand it, but you ladies are going to educate me on what PLN stands for. Tell me about it.
Well, it is something we're hearing a lot lately, kind of a buzzword, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But in the broader sense, personal learning networks, really, uh-huh. You know, they have been with us since teaching and learning began. You think of, as you grew up, how you had your network of tools. You went to the library and you got books. You had books in school, books at home. You had newspapers around. You went to school and listened to your teacher. Went to high school and college and listened to lectures. And all of those resources brought you information that needed to do what was your job at the time. The only difference is now we've had this huge glut of information through the internet. Mm-hmm. And things have changed. All of a sudden, the issue of space is no longer an issue. We can interface with people in so many different ways, learn and teach in so many different ways with so many different tools without leaving our desks mm-hmm. or our couch.
Right. Lots right. of and tools think, and lots of systems. Go ahead, Sally.
Oh, I just was going to say, we also have some freedom there, whereas before we looked to our teacher as being the source of all information, and so really our knowledge was limited to their knowledge on any particular subject. Now we basically have the world to learn from, you know, and it can be around, it can be learning around anything that we're interested in, not just education, you know, traditional education topics, but any issues or causes that we're passionate about. We can go out on the web and find other people, wherever they may be, who share those interests and who have knowledge to share with us about those topics.
I remember vividly when we got our first set of encyclopedias at our house, and man, was that a big deal, because now we had the world. You know, we didn't have to go to the library anymore, because we could look it up in the encyclopedia. Now multiply that times, you know, 1,000, and that's what we've got. This personal learning network that we're talking about is constantly expanding, and the expertise that existed only within those volumes of a particular encyclopedia now are infinite. You know, I think that's probably not overstating it, correct?
Right. And remember, for a while, we all had in education the World Book on CD-ROM,
mm-hmm.
and that was a big deal. That was a huge deal. We hardly use those anymore,
right?
Because you can go out to the internet, and although they're still good, they're fine and good, but you have to have that little thing with you. And with the way we're connected to our networks these days with our handheld devices and laptops and whatnot, we don't mess around with disks anymore.
Right.
So even that has changed.
So is that scary? Is that a scary thing for teachers at this point, now that their students have this vast array of learning resources? It's no longer a controlled experience.
I don't think it's scary at all. I think it's great, exciting, challenging. Learning how to manage it,
mm-hmm.
first of all, you know, build your own, like I'm building my own personal learning network.
Right.
And there are people out there that are talking in terms in education of helping students build their personal learning networks. The teacher would be a part of that, and, you know, the blogs that the kids are reading and the class they're communicating with through Skype or chat, you know, maybe even across the ocean on some topic. The sky's the limit. There's just so many possibilities of making real-time and authentic learning that I think it's just exciting. It's not scary to me at all. It can be overwhelming until you feel like you have a handle on how to organize some of it, but not scary.
But
how about you, Sally?
Well, I was just going to say, contrast the picture you painted at the beginning of our discussion of our personal learning networks as we grew up with what kids have today. And, you know, you mentioned a lot of them, but I think they're learning a lot through social networks as well, you know. And so we need to train them how best to have discerning hearts with all of this data that's hitting them. You know, what are the trusted learning sites, the things that they should take
right.
to heart, as opposed to all of the garbage that they are getting bombarded with, which is teaching them something, albeit not positive, in the process.
Yeah, we
right.
talked to... Go ahead, Gail.
Well, I was just going to say, in the classroom, with the teacher being in charge and organizing project-based learning and whatnot, using the social networking tools, I had my kids use cell phones for a project that we did. And I guess there's some places in the state of Washington I couldn't do that anymore because they just passed a law that bans them from schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's in how the teacher structures things, that there doesn't have to be a lot of fear of those things if there's a good facilitator on site. But it's when the kids are away from school and on their own that the social networking and the tools need to, you know, you need to address students about those times.
So I would think step one for a teacher would be developing their own PLN, their own personal learning network, in order for them to understand how it works and what the possibilities are, and then translate or transfer that to, you know, their students, and maybe teach the students. And I think this is where we get into trusted sources and giving some guidance to the students about how to learn, you know, teaching them how to learn versus mm-hmm. just the three R's, about their own, how to develop their own trusted personal, you know, learning network.
Yeah, when we decided to talk about personal learning networks, I did a little bit of research here just by coincidence, because one of my blogs that I subscribe to with an RSS feed came across my desk from David Warlick, and he talked about how that term came about. Somebody, a scholar, well, anyway, point being, he was the one who kind of made that term popular here in the United States, and he explains his experience starting in 2005, the idea that he began to read blogs. Okay, so he found a lot of good educational blogs. He started reading postings of other educators besides himself. And then he said what really did it for him is when he understood the importance of the RSS feed. So he started to integrate those feeds into his daily personal learning network, so to speak. And he defines that personal learning network as a body of people who have something to say that helps me do my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that definition. That's what I use my personal learning network for exactly. I'm not so worried about the kids yet as far as building your personal learning network. I do agree they're doing that in some respect. But I'm thinking more in terms of, in our wells, the teachers and their emergence into this area and how to encourage them and guide them to do this. I have found I've spent probably the last year trying to organize my personal learning network, even though it wasn't till halfway through the year I realized what it was actually called or mm-hmm. what term was given to it, you know. And I feel that I have a handle on that now, and it helps me tremendously. It is where I learn what I need to know to do my daily tasks and to keep up with current educational philosophy and new things coming out in technology. I rarely leave my room.
Yeah, all three of us are involved at various levels of doing presentations at different conferences and things like that. And, you know, I always find that one way that I learn something is to have to present on something or to engage in it to the point where I have to talk about it. And with blogging and the conversational nature of that, you know, you also have that two-way communication tool to comment back and engage with the blogger. So as you're learning something, you can ask questions and you can add your two cents onto what they've written about or whatever. So right. So that kind of enhances your learning. It's not all just one way, you know, absorbing things, but it's also being part of the conversation that's going on, be it via blogs or Twitter feeds or whatever it is, you know. So there's just a lot of different angles to this personal learning network.
Just the concept of the network, and that's how that's how these build. It's not just one person with hub and spoke kind of approach where one person disseminates knowledge. It's the collective network that makes this thing work. So there are probably a number of suggestions we could make if a teacher or anybody wanted to develop their own PLN. How would you advise somebody to move forward?
Oh, I think I have some really good ideas on that, but I promised I'd leave Twitter till the end, but I can't because it's been mentioned, because I am just so excited about that. I've used it for a year, but in the last 2 months, it's become just vital to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it took a while for me to get it,
mm-hmm.
all right? So, and this really tells you how I've gotten it, because I've been using it to gather information for quite some time and to put out things here and there. But for the first time, just a couple days ago, I did some research on SlideShare, SlideRocket, Camtasia, Flowgram. How can I put a PowerPoint with embedded movies into something that people can see it all over? That sounds like it's easy, but it's really not. You can't find one good program that does it all. So as long as I did the research, I wrote it up so that other people could benefit by it. I put it on my blog, and in Twitter, I just said, in case you're interested, because two people had responded to me in answer to my question about what do you use. Anyway, people definitely went out to my blog and looked, because I got about 10 new people asking me to follow them that day.
Beautiful.
You know, or wanting to follow me that day, I should say. They hadn't followed me before, but when they saw that posting come across in the general listing, they decided I was worth following. Mm-hmm. So when you're involved in the networking, you know, that's exactly what Sally said. You take and you give, and that's what makes it a network. You make an investment. I didn't have to spend that time yesterday to do that, but I wanted to help other people who are out there doing the same thing for me, even though I don't know any of these people.
So you are now a part of their PLN.
Yes, right.
Beautiful. Okay.
And some of them are people that I respect in education, and, you know, I'm looking forward to having further communication with them and maybe meeting them face-to-face at a conference sometime.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So that's Twitter.
Okay.
That's one thing. If you haven't done any of this, I guess I maybe wouldn't start with Twitter. It seems like the place most people start is with blogging and learning the value of that RSS feed, just mm-hmm. like Warlick mentioned. And that is a good place. Pick 5 blogs. Search for some blogs about education, if education is your thing, or whatever phase of ministry or interest you have. Find 5 blogs and learn how to, you know, get the RSS feed into an aggregator. I'm sure that there are people out there that don't use that tool yet. That would be a very a good one to start investigating.
Oh, that just becomes the center of, I think that would become the center of your PLN. Because even Twitter, you can bring in Twitter feeds right into any kind of aggregator. A couple good ones to consider. I use Outlook, so I bring it right into Outlook. But all the major browsers have aggregators now, and Google Reader is probably one of the best out there for sucking those RSS feeds in and having a single place to view all of that information where you can quickly thumb through all the new stuff from the previous day. And it almost becomes your, I'd almost describe it as a PLN newspaper. You know, that's your morning newspaper. You sit down and you say, what's right. going on? You know, what's the buzz? What are people talking about? Are they sharing different resources? And that really becomes a network. So if people aren't familiar with RSS, get smart in that. Maybe we should have a show. Now, we've talked about it in the past, but maybe a show on some of the best readers and ways to aggregate all that content. Because, boy, is that a time saver.
Right.
I think that's a great place to just really direct people. And maybe actually later on when we do our picks of the week, we can even mention some of the great education blogs that are out there to get them started or whatever. I know there's one blog post from the Innovative Educator that has a list of 5 things to do to develop a personal learning network. And that blog post actually links to different people that you might want to consider reading and different Twitter feeds and things that you might want to consider subscribing to or following, so that you know, you get a little bit of a jump start. You don't have to go out there and do much searching. You can just use this blog post as your starting point and begin subscribing there. And the thing about RSS is that you don't have to stay subscribed forever. If you read them for a while and it's not your cup of tea, then find someone else who is, you know, that's speaking to your needs as an educator or in your ministry area or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. I've found that with my own RSS reading, that I started with a couple of the more popular ones, but they led me to other areas that were maybe more niche and more of interest to me. And I pitched the ones that I started with and refined my reading list based on just kind of living in that RSS reader for a little bit. So great advice.
Right. And then although you can comment to, back and forth in blogs, and now that you can hook Twitter to your blog, you can do that a little more. I think there's some other, like, more parts of the social part of the networking that fit here in the personal network too, like even with the bookmarks. We've talked about Delicious and Digo briefly before, but the social bookmarking sites where you share mm-hmm. bookmarks with people would be another example. I commonly read bookmarks that people I have listed as friends put out there. And they read mine, because that means they know what kind of stuff I look for, and maybe I found something they didn't that they'd be interested. So that is another good thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to mention one final thing would be just the whole concept of the social networks that are created around a concept. One example would be the Ning network. And that's just a network out there. If you join Ning, you have the ability to create your own social network that people can join on whatever topic you're interested in. I know Sally and I are both kind of new members at the Classroom 2.0 Ning, and that's a social network because it presents content. Like, they put out a couple times a week, you can log in and watch a live show with a very reputable educator or technology person trying to connect technology and education lots of times. And at the same time, you can communicate with the other people then who also watch that show right on the site through your, I guess you'd call it email on the site there. Or
it's kind
chat
of like,
too.
Kind of like Facebook for educators.
Exactly.
It's a niche Facebook, basically, where you can write on each other's walls and all those kind of things, but you have a whole community of people interested in Web 2.0 in the classroom. So, so you're narrowing your scope and tapping into all of their expertise with your ability to ask questions on discussion boards and things like that. So, really exciting concept.
Right. I think that's some place we might go in the future. I know Bob Faust from out in California, he sent me on Facebook a little suggestion. I had asked, what do you guys want to talk about on the podcast? And he mentioned that maybe social networks like Ning would be something that we might consider starting ourselves. So put it out there for people to think about.
Beautiful. PLNs, Personal Learning Networks. I think we'll probably be revisiting this, and it probably touches a lot of different areas of conversations we've had over the past, too, because the whole concept of Here Comes Everybody, the Clay Shirky book we've been talking about, I think touches on that, and the ability to just get smarter with the tools that we have, boy, makes a lot of sense, and is a good stewardship of our time if we use the appropriate tools to do that. So, PLNs, thank you, ladies, for that educational process. Let's go to our interview next. We had a chance to sit down with Patty Ulsberger from Lenovo. That is the company that kind of sprang out of IBM and the whole ThinkPad series of notebooks and desktops. She talked to us a little bit about what Lenovo is up to and how members of Wells can take advantage of that, churches and schools and even individual Wells members, about some special pricing that we've been able to negotiate with Lenovo through Patty and the Shop Wells program. So let's listen to our conversation with Patty and specifically about some of the classroom technology that Lenovo offers. Very happy to have with us this morning Patty Ulsberger from Lenovo. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Kind of unusual today because we have actually Patty right in the office, the luxurious Wells Tech Podcast Studios, otherwise known as my office in Milwaukee. Patty, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do for Lenovo.
Sure. As you may know, Martin, Lenovo is a company that was acquired, was formerly the IBM PC company and was acquired by Lenovo. I came over from IBM.
Okay.
Now with Lenovo,
so you're
22 years.
IBMer.
Yeah, an old IBMer, now a Lenovian.
Okay. Lenovian, all right.
That's what we're calling ourselves. And I've been in the Wisconsin patch for about 16 years of my 22 years, and prior to that I was a high school teacher.
Okay. Now, you live down in Chicago, correct?
I live in Madison, but I'm in Chicago a lot. Yeah, because I have the Illinois territory also
perspective. You got the magic triangle there.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks again for joining us. Let's talk a little bit about classroom technologies and especially classroom usage of computers, laptops, desktops, whatever. On this particular show, we're talking about, we dedicate a show a month to classroom technology, and we thought this would be a good time to play the interview here. What do you see as far as trends are concerned when we're thinking of classroom technology? What are schools doing?
I'm seeing more schools looking at mobile technology versus desktop technology.
Mm-hmm.
What they can do are two things. Number one, they can replace that classroom with
a computer lab.
Exactly,
right.
And yeah. Have it become a classroom. Mm-hmm. Or they can supplement that lab because it's always booked and be able to put carts in the hands of teachers so that they can have more technology out there.
Mm-hmm. And how pervasive is this at this point? Are you seeing this in the majority of schools, or are you seeing it in pockets?
I'd say majority, and it's growing. Now, the thing that I'm surprised at right now is that more and more schools are starting to look at one-to-one. Mm-hmm. It's still not pervasive,
right.
But they're looking at it. I see it happening more in the privates than in the publics, mm-hmm. But even the publics right now are starting to look. So that's interesting.
Mostly at the high school level, I would assume.
Absolutely.
Okay. Anything
absolutely.
On the elementary? You deal with elementary schools?
Yes, I do. If I see one-to-one, it's middle school
mm-hmm.
and high school,
okay.
Not elementary.
Okay. Now, when you say one-to-one, that means as they come into the system, they are either purchasing or the school is subsidizing a laptop.
Yep, and a lot of times it's coming through the school versus the individual, because then what they can do is take advantage of all the educational software licensing, mm-hmm. whereas if it's an individual purchase from a family, it's harder to do that from a licensing perspective.
Right, right.
So, Patty, what about the new netbook technology?
Well,
things going smaller and smaller. Does that help with that?
Absolutely, and I think that's why the publics are now starting to become more interested in one-to-one, because they see that they can better afford the technology because of the netbook. And in fact, Martin, since I'm here, look what I brought.
Beautiful. I'm holding in my hands a small, cute little Lenovo netbook.
It's an IdeaPad okay. Netbook S10e. Mm-hmm. Yes. So 10.1-inch display. So,
and what other specs? How powerful is it?
It uses the Intel Atom processor, so it's
just pretty standard on the netbook lines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I always call it, the rules. You know, Intel gives us the rules as far as the processor, and Microsoft gives us the rules from the operating system. We have to load XP Home on it, or we do have a version with Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't put XP Pro on it yet, although I know people are fighting to get that going, because you can't put XP Home on a network in a school.
Oh, that's right. Not networkable.
Interesting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I assume when Windows 7 launches, that would be a prime candidate for these as well.
I would assume so also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got an old HP. Now, I say old. I've had it for now probably a year. Mm-hmm. HP MiniNote mm-hmm. that I put the beta version of Windows 7 on. Works beautifully. It's underpowered. It just runs off of an SSD drive
yep.
with a gig of RAM. And that's really you use it essentially for word processing, email, web surfing, and you know, I would assume that that's a challenge, though, in some classroom environments where you have educational software. Is that how does that work?
And that's the clincher with the netbook. You know, the netbook's great for doing just the average word processing, internet activity. That's the key right there.
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to be doing the e-books, that's where the ThinkPad is,
right.
from a Lenovo perspective, the better offering, because then that allows you more power, more storage, bigger display,
right.
things like that.
How about durability on these versus now, the one I've used ThinkPads for years in different organizations, and one of the big selling points and a lot of the reasons that organizations use them is just the rugged nature mm-hmm. of them. They've got the steel hinges, and they're almost indestructible. I mean, we had very few problems with them over the years. The netbooks, maybe not as much.
Given the cost point, we're not going to put in the steel hinges. We're not going to put in
right.
the spill-resistant keyboard tray, things like that.
Sure.
But, you know, for the value that you get in, you know, for the dollar,
mm-hmm.
it's a nice device. So,
sure. Sally, I interrupted you again. Go ahead, Sally.
It's okay. I'm just thinking, looking to the future, we're seeing just more and more applications going online.
Yes.
So probably the perfect solution for cloud computing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We have a relationship with SAS, which offers curriculum pathways, which used to be a billable content software. And now their CEO, from a philanthropic perspective, is offering it free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an awesome, you know, now you've got content via the net with this netbook.
All right. Just looking at this, all kinds of little slots on here. We got a couple USB ports. We have a SD card
mm-hmm.
slot,
mm-hmm.
Network accessible.
Kensington lock, just in case you want to put them in
sure.
a library.
Oh, yeah,
just,
that.
You know.
Yeah. It's got the built-in camera. I think a lot mm-hmm. of laptops now that are coming out have that as well.
Yes.
Important.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, you mentioned the SaaS relationship. I wonder if there's other programs or hardware or solutions for schools that Lenovo offers.
Well, we've got what we call a ThinkPad Academy, which is our one-to-one program, which, you know, we design individually with all our customers, because some customers, we only want pieces of the ThinkPad Academy. Some may want more. From a curriculum perspective, what we do is we have education models that come standard with the Adobe Digital School Collection, which is just awesome, because now you've got the Premiere Elements, Photoshop Elements, Acrobat, and starts with a C, Contribute. Mm-hmm. So we also have a partnership with VitalSource to do online books, so you can walk around with Shakespeare in your hands and be able to never lose it.
Mm-hmm. Right. How are you finding adoption by, I would assume that some of the barriers to this are the teachers themselves not wanting to, you know, kind of take that next step and say, hey, this is a digital classroom. How are you seeing that happen in schools?
Well, you know, from a private's perspective, it can be solved through their development plan, mm-hmm. In the sense that they will be mandated in their performance plan that they need to start integrating into their curriculum. The key thing that you need to do, though, is have professional development, because you can't just throw these laptops the teachers and say, go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. So that is real vital. From a Lenovo perspective, we have that capability, and we find it one-to-one programs that utilize professional development in from a teacher perspective as well as kids, it's more successful.
Mm-hmm. A lot of our schools are smaller. So they have very limited, let's say, IT staff. Mm-hmm. These solutions tax that, or are they pretty much standalone? How do they work?
Definitely. When you have integrate more of this technology, especially the one-to-one program, it is going to increase the pressure on your IT staff. But mm-hmm. one of the things from a Lenovo perspective that we tout is, you know what, we give you some tools to help ease that pain. Mm-hmm. We've got a tool called Rescue and Recovery to get back to that, you know, image
clean
that you're
state,
really,
right.
Yeah.
Before all the junk got into it.
It's that blue button, yeah, right. Which is very important. So mm-hmm. we give tools that allow you to take from the old to the new. So when you get, you know, after your 3 or 4 year life cycle, from a teacher perspective, you want to give them, you know, what they already had.
Sure.
And then we've got another tool that allows you to define the connectivity environments. Mm-hmm. It's called Access Connections. Mm-hmm. You can lock it down where nobody can change it. You can lock down your settings, but let them add Starbucks or whatever.
Sure.
Or you can be free will, which I would not mm-hmm. promote.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Patty, all sounds really wonderful. How do people go about taking advantage of any special Lenovo pricing that's out there for Wells schools?
Well, we have a website on your ShopWell site, two sites. One is for schools, and that would be lenovo.com/shop/deals, Wells Education. And then we also have a website for the churches so that they can also buy through your ShopWells. And then finally, I do have a personal purchase site for
individuals.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's posted on your ShopWell site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't say enough about the Lenovo line. Again, they've been around a long time. And if you're looking for something that is really durable and you know is going to last you and your investment's going to last you, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, which in these economic times, that really is kind of the mindset that you've mm-hmm. you're going to make an investment. It's got to be for the long term as opposed to disposable, you know, mm-hmm. that maybe our economy and our environment and our country is rethinking that whole disposable mentality and kind of investing in quality products, and these definitely would fit that bill.
Exactly.
What do you see coming up for Lenovo in the future? Any cool products other than maybe the netbook line?
We want to keep an eye on that netbook because it's mm-hmm. in its early stages, so I'm anxious to see what's going to happen next year, 3 years from now. Mm-hmm. Actually, I did just see on the internet our little pocketbook, and it was really cool. It was like, and I'm probably using the wrong term, but it's like a pocketbook,
uh-huh.
leather covering. You open it up, then it's a keyboard and display. Then you can flip it around, and now it's a mini tablet. And oh, by the way, it's got a leather cover with what looks like a clip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can take that clip off, and now it's your mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So the innovation there is just really,
smaller,
really
portable,
cool.
Smaller, portable, touch screens.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Carry your life, your digital life with you.
Yeah. Right. The other thing that I think we're going to be looking for in the future is more like classroom monitoring tools, because now you're getting all these tools and technology out there, and, you know, you don't want to put too many restraints on the kids, because I always say it's teachable moments now. You can teach them now so that they know how to use the technology appropriately when they get older.
Right.
Versus locking them down. But you still need some tools to help monitor and kind of catch them so that they learn.
Yeah, the biggest thing, you know, 5, 10 years ago was where they were passing notes back and forth. Now they've got access to the entire world, and that presents some challenges
absolutely.
To at all levels. Mm-hmm. So, Patty, thanks so much for your time. It's great having you come in, and we look forward to continuing to promote the Lenovo relationship. We're really excited about it, and I think there's some good potential across certainly our classrooms as it seems like Lenovo is focusing on classroom technologies and making that happen for them.
I am. Yep. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. We will put links to the show in our show notes about the Shopwell's program and Lenovo stuff. As Patty mentioned, there is stuff for schools, for churches, and for individuals. And I guess I can't speak highly enough about their products. In fact, one of the laptops that I have here in front of me, Sally and Gail, is a Lenovo laptop that basically runs the Skype portion of our show. So I think real quality stuff and probably worth checking out.
You know, she talked about the netbook a lot. I've got three young sons, and they're ready for a small computer like that. They're saving their pennies and dimes, and $300 price point is pretty affordable.
A lot fewer pennies and dimes, right, than
they
used to have. Yeah, exactly. So, beautiful. Thank you, Patty, for joining us and sharing that information on Lenovo. Our picks of the week is the next section up. Gail, you're our semi-regular guest, so we'll let you run first. I assume you have a pick?
I have a semi-regular pick.
Okay.
And I'm going to stick with the theme of the day and tell you about one of my favorite applications, which is Twirl.com. And
this is a Twitter app, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, you are a Twitter representative on this show officially now.
And there are many, many of them out there. There are tons of them. I use a different one on my touch, but on my laptop, this is my favorite because it's a desktop app. It sits right on the desktop. You don't have to have it open, and sometimes I have to make myself not have it open because as soon as the post comes up, a little bell dings and you can see it, and you know what it says. And everybody that talks all day long, as they come up, they're from your network, not the whole Twitter network, but just from my network. They pop in, and I can look at them right away if I want. And I like the fact that it's quick and right on my desktop. It works really well for me.
So you are part of this conversation live. I only check Twitter every once in a while, but you are really getting that feed and paying attention, huh?
Yep. Oh, I do. I have it. I work with it. I mean, all day when I'm working, it's open, and I can't tell you. The coolest thing was somebody had written in and asked, hey, when you're using a Mac, how in the world do you make a cent sign? Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know, I use a Mac all the time, and I don't know. I never do math. I don't know how to make a cent sign. And before I even thought about it, an answer was given over Twitter by Bernie Dodge, who is the creator of the WebQuest, who I follow. Mm-hmm. And so he pipes in and says, oh, Command-4. That's how you make the C or the cent sign. I thought, how cool is that? This, you know, big time person in education and technology, and he takes the time to tell somebody that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the network's all about.
Very cool. And it looks like it interfaces with Facebook for cross posting, LinkedIn, through a pick that I had a couple weeks ago, ping.fm. I think it was last week. So this is an Adobe Air application. So you actually have to download the Adobe Air runtime, which is free and is very easy to do. And that makes it run on Windows and Mac. So very flexible, very cool looking interface. So good pick. So while we're on Twitter, Gail, I suppose you ought to advertise your Twitter name so people can follow you.
Oh, mine is very tough. I used to have kind of a, you know, not everybody recognizes it when I started, but I got over that because I'm pretty comfortable with my network. So I'm Gail Potratz.
Beautiful. You just have to learn,
that's
you
it.
Know how to spell Gail and Potratz.
Yeah.
Neither
yes,
which is intuitive.
True.
So
that's true.
And Sally, you are?
I'm Wells Tech Trainer.
Wells Tech Trainer. That one's a little bit easier. Wells with one L, of course. And I'm M. Spriggs, very creative. So very good. Well, we got the Twitter stuff out of the way. On to the next pick, Sally.
Okay.
Nothing against Twitter. I use Twitter. So thank you, Gail. That's a great pick.
I am I'm going to ask everybody to brace themselves because the title of my pick is There's More to the Web Than Facebook. Imagine that. And it's actually a cool presentation done by Maria Anderson. Maria Anderson is a math instructor at Muskegon Community College in Michigan, and I had the privilege of sitting in on one of her presentations last summer at a distance education conference.
We had her on the show a while back, didn't we?
Actually, we did. We interviewed her last August, and she's just a really interesting lady doing some amazingly cool things with technology and math specifically, but she writes, you know, about a lot of different things, about Web 2.0 in general, and she typically produces her presentations in a mind map format. Martin, you and I are big fans of mind maps. And I think it's a really great way to share all the links and things that, you know, you want to give to your attendees, you know, and it's web-based. So they can go to your mind map and click on the links and go right to it. And she's put together a really amazing mind map for this presentation, More to the Web Than Facebook. She gets into a lot of different technologies that are out there. There's specifically things about Classroom 2.0, using the web in the classroom. And I found one that I hadn't heard of before. They are called Quizlet, which you can create your own flashcards for the web, or you can use the flashcards that are out there on the site. So that was pretty impressive. I played with it a little bit. You might want to check that one out. She also has a category called Supplementing Your Learning, which fits in well with our discussion today as well. And on there, I found something new, math specific, called Wolfgram Demonstrations, where they've actually Wolfgram created some software. He's a professor, and he created some software for easily mapping out mathematical equations and things like that. So it's almost like an Adobe Reader or something. You get the Wolfgram Reader, and you can play with all these cool mathematical illustrations via the web. So just some really amazing tools in Maria's presentation mind map. And Maria's a good one. I mentioned earlier, I will point you also to her blog, which is called teachingcollegemath.com, and her Twitter account called Busyness Girl. If you're building your personal learning network, she may be someone you want to follow, especially if you teach math at all, because she's got some great resources.
I can tell you're a math geek because you prefaced mathematical equations with the word cool.
How else would you
Isn't
talk
that an
about
oxymoron?
Math?
All right. Very good. Thank you, Sally. Mine's a little lighthearted. I ran across this application a while back and have been really enjoying it. It's an application, a website called Jiminy with a Y. And as the name might suggest, it's an application that tracks fitness and nutrition. And I've had some health issues, and my doctor said, you got to change your diet, and you got to do more exercise and the right kind of exercise. And The discipline part of that is what's tough for me, just staying with the program. But I've found that tools like this and Spark People, some people have heard of that. Jiminy is very similar to that, where you basically set your goal, whether it's a nutrition goal or a fitness goal, and you record on the web how you're doing against that. And Jiminy, for nutrition, you can search for different foods. They have, it's basically a community-based website. It's a social network of sorts where you can join and you can get gym buddies who are, you know, similar maybe in goals or aspirations. So, you know, they want to lose 5 pounds or they want to exercise so much a day, whatever it is. And then you can encourage each other and kind of track each other's progress. And accountability is a big thing. But each day you log what you ate or what you did as far as exercise, how much you lifted or what you walked or ran or whatever. Then you can, you know, put together nice graphs and charts and track your fitness, and other people can see that as well. Works really well. I can search for almost any food, and it's in there with the nutrition information already plugged into the right spot, so you can track your calories, your protein, your fat intake, et cetera, and then how much you're working off. Really nicely done. They have an iPhone application that goes with it and all kinds of other little tools, and most of this is for free. You can do the paid version, which I think is like $15 for 3 months or $45 for a year, something like that, which gives you some nutrition planning tools, those kinds of things. But kind of keeps you disciplined enough to track it and pay attention to what you're eating. I think kind of a fun thing that I stumble upon. That's Gymnee.
All right. Sounds like something worth checking out. Another one of those niche social networks popping up everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Everything's social at this point. If it's not social, it's not 2009. So, all right. Let's move on. We're opening up a brand new segment today called the New Technology Showcase, where we're going to look at things in the news or things recently released that may have some application to our work as technologists or ministry or both. And today, or recently this past week, Internet Explorer 8 was launched. Sally, you've been keeping your eye on that. What do you think?
That's right, Martin. I actually got brave enough to download it and install it on my computer yesterday after I did some reading. And there's some things I like. There's some things that I'll have to get used to. I guess change is a challenge for everyone. But one of the nicest things about it is they've incorporated something new called accelerators.
Yeah.
And what you can do with accelerators is basically drag across to highlight any part of a web page that you're viewing, and a submenu will pop up via a little icon. So if you're familiar with Microsoft Office 2007, where when you highlight things, there's all the editing options kind of pop up for you, and they're a little bit opaque on the screen. If you want to use them, you mouse over them and can start using them. And if you don't, you can just ignore it. That's exactly the way this accelerator icon works. It's there if you want to make use of it. If you don't, you can ignore it. But what's cool about it is they've given you some of your favorite applications right there tied to what you've highlighted on the web page. For instance, if you highlight a particular word, one of the accelerators could be dictionary.com, and you could just immediately basically paste that word over to dictionary.com and get the definition of that word, or Wikipedia, or mapping software. If you highlight an address, you can set up your favorite mapping software as an accelerator, and you have the ability to customize the list, so you can pick between Google Maps or Yahoo Maps or Windows Live Maps, whatever your favorite software is, and then it saves that step. I'm sure everybody's copied an address and then had to go and open a new window and open up the mapping software and paste in that address. Well, it's right there at your fingertips in Internet Explorer 8. So I really like, give two thumbs up to the accelerators feature. They have some other new features. One is called Web Slices, which is basically kind of like a mini RSS feed is how I would describe it. Basically, developers can mark their pages or sections of their pages that might update on a regular basis, and then you can subscribe to that and get notification if something changes on a page that you're watching via this web slice feature. So, for instance, you can watch an eBay item that you're interested in purchasing, and anytime someone makes a bid on it, you can be notified of that via the web slice. Or you can watch a stock market price, and when it changes, be notified of the changes or whatever. And I think this one, you're going to see this adopted on larger websites, but it's not something you're going to see in more in regular, normal websites, at least not immediately, because it takes some development in order to embed these web slice tags into the coding on the web pages. So we'll see if that one's something that gets adopted widely and made use of or not. But it's new technology. They did include some better filtering and things. They've called it Smart Screen now instead of their phishing filter that was in IE7. And it just notifies you when a site tries to install malicious software and that kind of thing. So hopefully they've upped the ante, helping you with your privacy and all those kind of things along the way. And then they have more visual searching and the smarter address bar included with Internet Explorer 8 as well. The address bar, it takes a little getting used to because most of the web address is grayed out except the domain name is a bolder color. Just to kind of draw your eye to what domain am I actually on? Am I on the domain I expect to be on? So if you're clicking on something and it was done maliciously or whatever and it redirects you to a different domain, it really jumps out at
it helps for phishing sites, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the visual search will do things like if you search on weather and sleepy eye, it'll actually pop up the results there in the search box drop down area. So you don't even have to go to a specific web page. You can see the information right there connected with the search box. So some nice features and, like I said, some getting used to as well. Things are different, but I think for the most part some good improvements to Internet Explorer 8.
And I did not.
Have you tried it?
I did not install the final version. I have played with the betas, and one thing that I did notice with the betas is I thought it was a little snappier, a little bit faster than IE7, probably equaling more what we're getting with Firefox. So I think there are some optimizations that they've done, some speed ups. I also like the accelerators because one thing that you can do with those is when you hover over them, a window will pop up right over overlay right over your screen. So you're not actually going to another site where you can see what the dictionary reference is or if it goes to Encarta or the map. You can pull up a map. Very cool that way. So you don't even have to go to another website to maybe find out what you're looking for. So I think they've done a nice job, and I think they had to keep up with what's going on with Firefox and Safari and those and Chrome now as the browser wars are heating up. So I guess I would, without reservation, recommend the upgrade. Now, if you're in business, you may obviously want to do some testing to make sure that it works with your intranet types of applications, as we would do here in the Senate office. But for personal use, I think there's some good things. And security is going to be better, too. So I think that's a good enough reason to upgrade.
Just reminded me of one more thing, Martin. They have a compatibility button built in, so you can view it via the previous browser if the website isn't displaying correctly in Internet Explorer 8.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I did notice with the betas, that there were some websites, even some of Microsoft's own websites, that did not display correctly. So I think they fixed that with that compatibility feature. So that's kind of nice to have as well. So I think they've got a solid product, so give it a try. All right, community feedback. We had a number of people talking to us again. So who's talking to us, Sally?
Well, most of the comments center around our show last week, Martin, which we talked extensively about PDF formatting and software to use. We heard from Josh Shanick at Kettle Moraine, and he had a couple of concerns, considerations, I guess I would call them, for using PDF on your website. One was to make sure that the people trying to read your files have the Adobe Acrobat Reader. You know, obviously you can't enforce them installing it, and it doesn't come automatically with browser updates. They have to download and install the software. And so, you know, at least make links to it available and, you know, consider if it's possible to put it on the website rather than in a document format, you know, do that instead, just for the convenience of your site visitors. The other concern he had was in recruiting and communicating with potential Chinese exchange students, the people in China didn't have the PDF reader. So if it's possible, again, it's better to put the content on your web page. The people in China could read the website just fine, but they couldn't read the documents in PDF. So two great considerations there.
Yeah, I think in this global economy, in this global virtual world that we have, there's all kinds of considerations that we maybe hadn't thought of before. And dealing with folks in China is is an ongoing problem, you know, because of the way the government chooses to regulate what their citizens can do and see and use on the internet. So, thanks for those comments, Josh. Gail, do you use PDFs in your spot there in New London?
I do. I use them all the time, and I learned some good things that I'm going to pass along to our secretaries especially and teach them how to do from the show last week. So
yeah, I think we're just going to see an explosion of PDF tools, as we talked about last week, because of the open source nature of it at this point. So mm-hmm. Perry Lund was talking to us as well, right, Sally?
That's right. He shared another PDF tool, just like you said, an explosion of them. He's using PDF Shrink on his Mac, and it's a great product for optimizing or shrinking, making it as small a file size as possible. So we'll include a link to PDF Shrink. He seems really happy with it, using it in a business setting on the Mac platform.
Yep,
so
Mac only, as I recall. Yes.
Hey, thank you for that.
Very good.
And they also make a bunch of other stuff, too, that he referenced there. PDF Appraiser, Merge, Enhance, Checkup, Spy, and Constructor, all from Apago, right?
Okay.
Apago.
Better you than me.
Apago. Or Apago.
Be creative.
Okay.
All right. I had one comment from Rob Benson, who's in our tech department, about the PDF show. He said that was a good one. Too many people pay to create PDF files when, for basic tasks, freeware versions work very well. And what I was excited about was Rob posted that on my Facebook page, and I've begun a practice of posting our weekly podcast out on my Facebook page, and it's really simple to do. So I wanted to put a plug in. Maybe we'll have a little guerrilla marketing among our Wells Tech listeners to share the show if you have a Facebook page or in other areas like Stumble Upon, Delicious, Dig. We actually, on our Wells Tech website, that's wellstech.wells.net, at the bottom of every page of show notes, there's a bar with all kinds of ways to share the show. Facebook is one of those, and I've just been clicking the button for Facebook, and it just communicates with my Facebook account and posts the link and a little description of the show on my Facebook profile. And that's how Rob found it and actually made the comment and everything. So, you know, click on your favorite link and share the good news about the Wells Tech podcast if you're so inclined.
Click away, yes. You can click more than one.
That's right.
If you're a part of more than one social network, which many of us are.
Right. Our last PDF comment came from someone close to you, Martin. We heard from Pastor Dan Witte down at Lakewood Ranch, Florida.
Not geographically, but relationally. It's my brother-in-law.
Okay. And he talked about possibly sharing information on encrypting PDFs, mm-hmm. maybe for some private information that you're putting out there for a specific audience. You could include some passwords and those kind of things.
Yeah, just to understand the difference, because you can do both with PDFs. You can encrypt them and you can password protect them. That there is a difference. So if you're really just looking for a modicum of protection against unauthorized viewing of it, password protection would be fine. If you want to go get really secure, you could password protect and encrypt with a password, and I think that's there's maybe more limited use for that. But if you're looking, and the reason he brought it up was something that would be copyrighted, you have to make a decision there. How secure do you want it to be? And I think we've talked about Creative Commons in the past, and that would be something to consider as well. So if you want to copyright something, so to prevent it from being used in ways that you don't want it to use, you don't want other people to use it, I think there's maybe a good case to be made for using a Creative Commons license for that as well, and maybe not password protect it, but just allow people to read that copyright notification and trust that they will be law abiding.
Very good. Changing topics a little bit, we also had a question from Pastor Tim Wagner. He's at Abiding Peace Lutheran Church in Elgin, Illinois. And he was looking for a way to create his own RSS feed, basically. maybe having a web page but making it have an RSS feed to go along with it when he's not using software that necessarily generates that RSS feed for him. Yeah. And Martin, you had some suggestions for Pastor Wagner.
I think Ponyfish would probably fill the bill. We've used it here for crafting RSS feeds that are non-standard for pages that are a little bit different. So ponyfish.com, I think, would be an excellent resource. Basically, you go to Ponyfish, you enter in your URL, it'll read your page, and then you have to kind of train it as to what information you'd like to spit out in an RSS feed. So what information changes, how the URL is formatted differently from piece of content to piece of content. They've got a good tutorial there on ponyfish.com, so give that a try. I think that would be a good way to go.
Yeah, I know we've heard from different listeners at times there's people that create their own manually.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the concept Pastor Wagner asked about using a Twitter hashtag, like we're using Pound Wells Tech to get a feed of all the conversation around the Wells Tech podcast. But, you know, none of those are real clean solutions. I think Ponyfish is going to be your best bet for actually scraping your own page and getting a clean solution to your RSS feed needs.
You betcha. Next week, that's it for community feedback, right, Sally?
That's it.
Okay, keep those comments coming. We would love to hear from you. And to encourage that, next week we're going to be announcing a new contest. We're not going to share it now, but tune in next week and you'll find out what it is we're going to be giving away. It was a year ago that we did something similar. And tune in next week to find out exactly what that is on April. Is it on April Fool's Day?
I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Should be interesting.
Okay. And we'll also be hoping to have Rob Benson. He had a comment in our community feedback section. Hoping to have him back talking about security. April Fool's Day is probably a very good day to talk about phishing and how to keep things safe and not get fooled by those people who want to bilk you out of your usernames, your passwords, your social security numbers, your whatever, your identity. So hopefully a great conversation there with Rob next week. That will about do it. Gail, you have anything else to share with us?
No, I don't.
Okay, enjoy your daffodils.
And, I'll do that.
And we will rejoin next week on April Fool's Day, as we always do. Let's close the show with beautiful music from In His Service, their album In Our Hearts, the song Praise God, From Whom All Blessings Flow. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.